From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Talk that matters. Germ Warfare and Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, you just heard the voice of Patrick Henningsen. He is back on Twitter. I saw him tweet about it, I think, yesterday, today, can't remember, but he is back. So it does appear that a lot of the banned or censored accounts are returning to Twitter. I'm not convinced about what Elon is doing. I wish I was able to read him. I don't know anybody who can read him. The guy is an absolute enigma. Yeah. But I am kind of hoping that this 4D chess that he's playing with Twitter is going to have a good conclusion. But I don't know. I'm going to ask my guest in a moment what he thinks. By the way, send me an email, germwarfare@tntradio.live. As always, let me know where in the world you are. Jump into the live chat. It's on the website, tntradio.live. Say hi. I got a fantastic guest. I tried chatting to him last week, and the powers that be decided that I was not going to talk on radio. So we're trying again today. Oh, it's a good day here, the bottom tip of the African continent. Sun is shining. Very uplifting indeed. I do enjoy global warming very much. I don't know why everybody is so fearful. Even if the climate hysteria narrative were true, even if the world is warming up by a whole massive 1 degree Celsius in the next 100 years, I'm struggling to see the bad side of that. Think about it. More sunshine, more girls in bikinis on beaches. I mean, what's that Beach Boy song? I wish they all could be California girls. Now we can have California everywhere. I mean, 1 degree. Well, what is so scary about this? And even if the ocean rises by, what, 1 centimeter in a century, are people unable to build a wall? It's just so bizarre, this whole fear-mongering porn. It's just absolute nonsense. Anyway, my name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
Stream the news wherever you are.
I listen on Alexa.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, round two. Brad from Five Times August. Thank you for joining me in the trenches.
All right, it's good to be back. They didn't want you talking to me last time.
Well, looking at your recent tweets, I would imagine that nobody would want to see you talking or hear you talking. You are going after, you are properly targeting some big names.
Yeah, I feel like somebody has to. We can't just move forward and pretend like nothing happened. And a lot of really crummy decisions were made, particularly in my field of in the music industry. A lot of artists really segregated and ostracized their fan bases and caused a lot of damage. I want to try to get some responses out of them. So yeah, I've been sort of going after quite a bit of them the last week, and they either ignore me, block me, or ignore me for the most part.
Did I see correctly? Did Pink block you, or was it Celine Dion? I can't remember now.
Yeah, it was Pink, and Questlove has blocked me. Gene Simmons has blocked me. Some other influencers, I can't remember. Basically, these are. It started with the artists that were doing a paid Pfizer campaign.
Yeah,
just came out last week, and it just really set me off. That, you know, we all know that there's these campaigns. We all know that they're getting paid. They've been going on since the beginning of this thing. But to be at this point, I feel like we're at the crossroads here. We're long past the crossroads, but particularly going into 3 years, if you're doubling down on this narrative and helping enable it, you're committing to the evil that has been bestowed upon the world right now. And I've had enough of it. And if I can lend my platform to pushing that narrative forward, or to pushing, not that narrative, but to creating conversation, to calling these people out, then that's what I'll do.
Well, God bless you for doing that. I hope more do it. But I excuse the cynic in me, but do you think it's going to make any difference to those individuals?
I don't know. I think that Twitter, you're just talking about Elon and what's going on with Twitter. And I think that we have a landscape to have these conversations. And so why not try? You know, I don't think I'm going to change anybody's mind, particularly if they've already been paid, particularly if they're in a certain celeb grouping. You know, they'll just likely brush me off as a troll. But I think what we can do there is, you know, make a point. You know, when Pink blocks some indie artist from Dallas, Texas, you know, or whoever's running her account, you know, you can tell you got to them a little bit. And that's revealing that they would prefer to block me rather than address the situation. Because what I'm doing is I'm asking them, basically saying, hey, you know, for anybody that hasn't been following my Twitter, basically what I'm saying to artists is, hey, you require this shot at your concerts for people to show up. You pushed it. You enabled this thing that is now damaging countless people around the world, that people that are injured, we're seeing sudden deaths. And basically, I'm asking them if they're willing to either take responsibility for what they've done and address it, or if they would like to donate to some of the vaccine injured organizations. The one I keep pulling up is React 19 out of the United States here, react19.org. And I've met these people, I've talked to them, I've heard their stories, and I know who they are. I just feel like the COVID-19 shot is going to be the linchpin. You're seeing it with a lot of doctors right now, but it's making you question not just shot the COVID shot, but it makes you then question other shots. And then when you're questioning the other shots, then you're questioning the entire medical field. So exactly. It's my attempt to, you know, help people at least crack the egg in their brain that something, you know, there's something worth looking at here. There's something worth talking about. And I did have one artist respond, to their credit, which was Peter Frampton. And Peter Frampton actually responded. Yeah. I said he had a tweet that was, it was basically, how do we get the majority of people vaccinated, was his tweet. And I just asked him if he had the same perspective he had when he tweeted it. I wasn't very rude about it or anything. I just asked him, do you still feel this way? And would you like to donate to react19.org? He said, no, I still feel this way. And it was very blunt, and he didn't acknowledge donating to help anybody. But that's the main crux of the thing, is I'm trying to get help for these people. I'm trying to help this organization. I mean, there's other great organizations out there too, trying to help. Because I think that once you get these stories out there, once you get people talking about it, like I said, you're going to see a reverse engineering in people's minds. And sure, they'll fight against it. It's a tough battle to get anybody to admit they're wrong. But if we don't try, then nothing happens. So that's how I like to use my platform on Twitter.
What do you make of Scott Adams supposedly doing a 180?
Yeah, I just saw that yesterday, actually. I was a little behind on that. But, you know, I appreciate how he approached it, because he was very matter of fact about it. Although he did say some things about how he said something along the lines of, like, the anti-vax angle was the weaker of the arguments in the beginning, and now it's the stronger one. And it was like, no, it's always been the stronger argument. That's why it won. That's why you're sitting there saying it was, it's not that the information ever changed. It was that, you know, it was like that from the get-go. It's just that we were in tune with spotting BS from the get-go and you ignored it. So, it's interesting to hear that, you know, it, I'm, I will celebrate somebody, anybody waking up and being willing to talk about it. Because when you get somebody who is on that other side to even talk about it, then hopefully that influences other people as well to sort of wake up a little bit more. You know, like I said, there's so much resistance, cognitive dissidence and people, you know, to admit that you're wrong. I mean, if you think about the conversations that have happened over the last couple of years, that side of the aisle has been vile. They've wished death and sickness and shamed and blamed, and you know, they've really brought out the worst into themselves and really committed to it. So to reach a point where you go, oh, I was wrong, you know, it takes a lot to get there to even say the words, I was wrong. Now, will you say, I apologize and I'm sorry? I don't know. I can't remember if Scott actually said those words, but I think that those words are a requirement to get started. You don't sit through an abusive relationship and then have the abuser say, I'm sorry, and then move forward. That's just the beginning. So I think an apology is in order once you reach that point, and that's the hardest part.
Scott was on my show, but right, I think, at the beginning of all this stuff, so we didn't even talk about it at the time. And I spoke to him during December now, and I asked him if he'd come back onto my show to chat about all of it, and he agreed, but he doesn't want to come on just yet. So I think he's still trying to figure out the puzzle pieces that you and I have long pieced together. But I've got this weird cynicism about what Scott is doing. It's almost as if he's being patronizing. The way he's tweeting, going, well, how do you know? Or do you trust strangers? And it's almost as though he's overdoing it, which makes me quite suspicious. But I guess on the other hand, he is maybe winning a few people over. I don't know.
Yeah. See, I don't follow Scott close enough. I get that tone too. I do pick up on that when I read his tweets. And that might be also part of him trying to make himself feel better about it. When you put a little bit of snideness to your comments to make yourself feel better about having to cave to a belief that you've adhered to over the last couple of years, which, you know, that doesn't bode well for him. But we already know that we've won this battle, and it's not like we're all real proud of it or we're going to gloat about it, because it's a terrible time to be right in history. You know, it's unfortunate, and you do sit there and go, yeah, well, we told you. I think that for somebody, you know, that is been so adamant about being right, I think those conversations are for them, right? It's like the actor Tim Robbins came out a few weeks ago on Russell Brand's show and was talking about how he behaved and it wasn't right. And I don't need to hear that. That's great. I'm glad you woke up. But you know who does need to hear that? Everybody else that's like you. And so that's who I hope picks up on it.
What do you make of Elon?
I've been struggling with that the same way you sort of mentioned. I like what he's done with Twitter, and I celebrate that. I like some of the things that he's saying, but at the end of the day, when your goal is to Neuralink the entire population, you know, it's one of those things where, look, I'll celebrate the small victories, but if one day he turns around and you realize, oh, he was a diabolical, you know, evil genius, I'm not going to be surprised, because we have so many of those people in the world right now. So I remain skeptical on, you know, just about anybody in the public spotlight. But it's so hard to get any of the good guys on board to see any, you know, to make any change. And, you know, there's moments where I'm like, oh, I hope he's one of the good ones. But at the same time, you struggle with that, because I am not on the side of microchipping anything in anybody's body. And I just think that's a dangerous route. And so, you know, we'll see long term. But you know, on the Twitter platform in and of itself, you know, I'll take it as it is right now and utilize it to the best I can, because we can say things, you know, we can say things that we weren't allowed to say only if a few months ago. And you can feel that shift, although some days it feels like it's back to normal and you get trolls and, you know, random people popping up and you're like, wait, what is this again? And you can feel it. It's interesting how you can be in a virtual space and feel the shift of energy. It's like the moment Elon was interested in Twitter, there was a shift, you know, when he was making his offer to Twitter, I think it was like he hadn't even purchased it, but everybody could feel a shift on Twitter. There's like an energy there. And then it sort of went away. And then the day the deal was done, it's like nothing really changed. The deal was just done, but nothing on the back end really changed. But the shift, you could just feel the wave and people let go. And I think that comes from the incremental suppression that we've had over the last several years of just little by little. You can feel it on your shoulders. You can't say this, you can't say that. You've got to reword this or use an emoji to express yourself instead of actually say the word. And that stuff is packed on top of our society and our conversation as a culture, that when we feel it released for a moment, it just unloads. We just, you know, it's like getting a breath of fresh air for the first time in a long time without realizing you've been breathing in the smog, you know?
Yeah. I've said this a few times, but I've got a soft spot for Elon because he comes from South Africa, and not many good things come from my side of the world. So I'm kind of holding thumbs and hoping for the best, but I've got this horrible, this horrible cynicism that's just sitting on my other shoulder. Listen, Brad, quickly, I have to do an ad break. I'll be back with you now.
TNT Radio's Rick Munn.
Here's what you really need to know about the original Nuremberg Code. It states that anything being used under experimental use must be stopped if there is a clear indication of any harm or death. Okay, that's one of the principles that was brought in the first place. So by definition, this is being broken and ran over by the current regimes on the planet at the minute. People are being maimed, people are being killed, children are being stillborn as a result of these experimental drugs. So the Nuremberg Code itself states this vaccine rollout should be stopped, but it's not. So if they can't keep to the principles of Nuremberg 1, you really think they're going to have a Nuremberg 2? And while the current administration is sitting, wake up. It's not going to happen. Forget Nuremberg 2. Try keeping the Nuremberg 1. Try keeping to the core principles that were brought out as a result of Nuremberg 1. If you can't do that, don't talk about Nuremberg 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6. It's like me talking to Darren Eilish here. What are we going to talk about in June this year? I have no idea, Darren. I haven't got a clue what's coming down the line. We'll have to focus on January. Is that not a first statement? So forget about Nuremberg 2 while they're still abusing and decimating Nuremberg 1.
He's locked and loaded. Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
Elon Musk says Twitter's censorship of the Hunter Biden laptop story was the definition of election interference, and that the firm was acting as an arm of the DNC. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Brad from 5 Times August. I tell you what, it's easier to say Brad from 5 Times August than to attempt that surname of yours. Wow, Schistimus. Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, you got it right. That's great. You got it. But that's the
doesn't
idea
roll off the
for
tongue.
Sure. Yeah, that's the idea. Just go with 5 Times August. I get a lot of Mr. Five and Mr. August, and a lot of people think that's my actual name, but yeah, it's quite funny.
The way the authorities have been clamping down on my electricity, I'm going to go with 2x January.
You've got to disguise it. Somebody was telling me the other day they were trying to tag me on Facebook, and every time they tried to tag 5x August on Facebook, that they were having trouble with it. And then when they finally got it to work, the COVID warning popped up just in association with my name, which I thought was fascinating. These little things that happen.
Chatting to you last time about your music, and then we got cut off. So I want to just chat a little bit about your music, because obviously that's your staple. And I'll say off the bat, I have traditionally never been a fan of indie music. I love your music, all right? And I'm not quite sure where that switch came. Maybe it was this whole scam of the last few years that has like rewired my brain, because I know it's rewired a lot of brains around the world in all aspects. You mentioned earlier vaccines. I question all vaccines. Now, I don't trust any of them. I wouldn't have said this to you 5 years ago, even 3 years ago. Now, I love your music, but what inspires you?
Well, what's pushing me forward now is the idea of my kids' future. And that's at the backbone of my decision to speak out through my music. I've been a pop songwriter since 2001. 5x August came about right after high school. So I've been around. But, you know, it's just, and I've done, you know, very polished stuff over the years, studio recordings and written for movies and commercials and TV shows. And what I felt was missing at this time when I started speaking out was just honesty and in music. And, you know, number one, the landscape of artists speaking out was bare. There was nobody really there. But also, what is there now in the mainstream doesn't mean anything. It's all fluff. And there is room for fluff music. It's always been around. But it's extra thick these days, and nobody is using music as in the mainstream market, you have artists like Cardi B top in the charts with songs like WAP, and it's really just kind of disgusting. But what I've done as an indie artist is, you know, most of the songs that I've put out are just me and guitar. I wanted to give an honest statement to people in an honest way. I mean, it's a performance. It's a song that I recorded at home on a bare budget, and I just kept I recorded it in a very traditional way. I set up my mics and I performed. I'd write a song, I would perform it, and just straight up play it as a performance and record it. Versus nowadays, you record the drums and you lock it in the tempo, and then you add all the other instruments and everything's programmed. And so it was important for me to just say, look, there's still a realness out there, and there's something to be said at these times. I mean, that's what music is supposed to do. I grew up listening to a lot of the artists that I sort of pay homage to through these songs. Artists from the 60s, Bob Dylan, folk artists, protest artists that didn't show up to this fight. And I felt like we need to reconnect with that. So that's kind of been my approach, is just say what you need to say without trying to spit shine it and without trying to water it down, and give people an actual, honest, sincere moment saying it. And I think that's why it's resonated so much. I get a lot of nice comments from people all around the world who, you know, kind of like you just said, you know, maybe you didn't really listen to that kind of music, you know, a lot of like people that are fan of heavy metal, you know, to listen to a guy with an acoustic guitar is quite a different take. But I think, you know, I put all the weight into the words for the most part. So, you know, you can interpret the music in your own way, and perhaps in your head, you're imagining it in a hard rock way or something like that. But it's the words, yeah, I think, that connect so well at the end of the day. I've put everything I can. I've made the music simple, actually. Most of the chords are just a few chords, or most of the songs are just a few chords in a very traditional sense, three or four chords that any guitar player can sort of play. But all the weight has been put into the words.
I don't think there's a problem with simplicity at all. In many ways, mm-hmm, it says more. But right. I mean, I come from a background of sort of skate punk, and so, mm-hmm, I've got, you know, I know all about the three chord, four chord, power chord structures, and that sort of, mm-hmm, high speed, sort of rock kind of sound. But at the, mm-hmm, same time, as I'm getting older, I'm also enjoying the more broken down stuff a lot more. I'm not sure if that's an age thing, but there's certainly, as you point out, and rightly so, there's a sense of depth and substance that is missing now in the year 2023 from so much music. It's definitely a hole that you're filling, and thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And with great tunes and melodies, and it's catchy and all the right sort of ingredients. But I do wonder what's happened, Brad. What has happened to music?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, I think that you know, since I think rock and roll came on the scene, you know, there's never been a more important time right now to be rock and roll. And for me personally, I think that rock and roll, as we knew it growing up, this idea of anti-establishment, being against the man, to me, and being such a lover of that music and feeling like it taught you so much, I feel almost betrayed by all of the artists that have cowered to the government. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's a farce. I feel like we're at a, you know, I just mentioned a crossroads a minute ago, but I think on the entertainment complex, we're at another crossroads, where it's time for artists to speak up as well. But what has happened, I think, is, you know, things get formulaic. You know, it's been around for a long time, is, you know, going back, predating rock and roll even, is when something worked, you try to replicate it and give it, send it back out and try to do it again, right? With pop songs in particular, that's sort of the formula, is something comes along, and that's why you can sort of pinpoint the era in which a song is recorded, right? When you hear hard rock with record scratches in it, you know that that's 90s, late 90s music, you know, yeah, and that was sort of a thing at the time. Or you know what, you know, disco is late 70s, and there's certain genres and different sort of things that happen. But what's happening right now is that everything is so automated. We live in such an automated time. And so you can write a song using artificial intelligence, and the lyrics will pop up for you. So that's the stuff that we sacrifice, the realness, the humanness of our creations. You know, you're seeing a lot with visual art too, with apps and everything. You don't have to be a painter anymore. You can take a picture, put an app over it, and it looks like something that Van Gogh painted. And so we're sort of losing that with art across the board, which is, I think, another thing that you can feel when an artist sits down to write a song and perform it for real. You can feel that difference, which I think is what makes the artists in the freedom movement, in truth, that there's not very many of us, but the few that there are, I think that's why you can feel that, and why it resonates so much deeper, is you can feel that the heart is in there, the heart and soul of it. You can't duplicate that in an app.
Mm. Brad, don't go anywhere. I'm just quickly going to do news headlines.
Great news.
The news.
We have news.
Great news.
Great news. Great news.
Great news, my friends.
Yeah. Listen.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Russia's accused the West of applying a neo-colonialist approach to Africa by patronizing its nations instead of cooperating with them. The symbolic doomsday clock, which is used to measure how close humanity is from obliterating itself, is now the closest it's ever been to striking midnight after being moved forward on Tuesday. And the White House is suing Google, accusing the tech giant of abusing its dominance in the online advertising market.
Silence for thinking differently? Silence for thinking differently. Not here. Silence for asking questions? Not here. Not here. Silence for discussing the other side of the story? Not on TNT Radio. Join the conversation anytime. Search TNT Radio on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, or Gab. Download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Brad, I don't know if you just heard that headline. The White House is suing Google. Do you think these people have got any sense of irony?
No, I don't. We have the dumbest people working in the White House right now. It's insanity watching it unfold every single day. It's something new, so can't say I'm surprised.
Man, but there is an interesting segue there because you, as well as I, are very engaged in the information war. And it's so funny to me, and well, maybe not funny, it's so unfortunate to me that what you and I see as blatantly obvious, so many around us don't. And I ask my wife constantly, how is this possible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. You know, we've all got family and friends that, you know, there's been a separation, a lot of family and friendships from these modern times where, you know, I know that happened with me over the course of 2020. I changed a lot in 2020 from thinking that we had a standard baseline of understanding on how to live as humans together. And so as I'm, you know, sort of picking up on things from the get-go and going, wait, masks, wait, social distancing, wait, what, the government, why are we trusting the government? I thought we all knew, you know, growing up, you don't believe everything you see on TV. And, you know, this was like in my psyche, and I thought everybody knew this, right? And then you see people going along with it, and little by little that idea that I had that we all understood this crumbled. And you sit there and you go, wow, you know, and then it affects friendships and relationships or friendships and family. And you know, I've got people in my life that, you know, maybe they live in California, right? They live in a whole other world. The information that they're absorbing on the day to day is completely different information than what I'm absorbing. They're not, you have to seek out the information that you and I know. You have to sort of look beyond just what's put in front of you, obviously. It's the mainstream narrative that's at the forefront, but they've done an incredible job staying at the forefront. And that's why you get, you know, I don't understand how people don't see through it. That to me is mind boggling. But what we've witnessed, and it was a really profound moment to realize, oh, we've actually witnessed a mass brainwashing. Like there's an actual brainwashing that I just watched, you know, whoever it was in my life, who now does not talk to me. People that have grown up with me, right? That should know what I'm about have labeled me dangerous all of a sudden. Somebody programmed them, you know, to believe that I am dangerous, somebody that they've known, or fans that dropped off when I started releasing these songs that were angry about what I was saying. They didn't want to have a conversation. They were programmed to just shut the door and say, I'm mad at you. I'm not listening to your music. Not ask me why I would say such a thing, you know, but just shut it down. And I don't know, you know, how you reach those people. It's just that, actually, this is my theory, is that over I think Trump was the catalyst for the thing, the brainwashing, right? You had, and the moment he announced that he was going to run for president, an instantaneous reaction from the media happened day in and day out over 4 or 5 years to tell people to hate this guy, no matter what. You have to hate him, you know, not just disagree. If you disagree with him, fine, but you have to hate him. You have to literally want anybody else in that position than him. And so you had half the country here go along with that. And every day, you know, it was relentless. That's how the news survived over the course of his presidency. And so the moment comes then to vote for somebody new. And it didn't matter how, you know, Joe Biden got in the office. He was going to get in the office and people were going to accept it because it was not Trump. And so then they've been beaten down into accepting whoever was in that position. And so I think a lot of that, you know, by the time we get to COVID, right, people are already in that trance. And I think it all happened, you know, long before that. It's just that it really, you know, it happens through TV program. It's been happening since the inception of TV.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, like what I was talking about earlier with patterns in music, and you get to find these sort of templates on how to master these things, master a pop song, you master programming in the news, right? And I think we've mastered that. The media mastered that with Donald Trump. How do you get people to a big, huge swath of people to completely detest one man, no matter what he says, no matter what he does? And they accomplished it. And then they could lean into that from there, right? And and then start to mold their minds into what we witnessed with COVID regulations and fear and all that propaganda.
I was actually a Trump fan. I mean, and I can say that quite comfortably because I don't have a dog in your fight. But I thoroughly enjoyed how the media just completely melted when he announced he was running for president, and when he actually won in 2016, I think it was. And I've got three MAGA caps. And what's funny is that two of them are made in China. And I felt so bad that I went through a lot of effort to get one that's made in the US, since that is what Trump wanted. US, you know, proudly US. Look, I'm a little forgiving of Trump. I know he did Warp Speed, and I think that was a terrible thing, and he's doubled down on it. And I'm not a wild fan of some of his foreign policies, but I am a little forgiving because I think he's so narcissistic and so self-important that he surrounded himself with people who he thought just knew better than him, and he went with them. And I think he was a little bit propagandized. However, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. But the point I'm making is that I'm agreeing with you that there was a sense of brainwashing that happened. And you're quite right. It certainly started from, in terms of, to that degree in the media, from Trump.
Yeah. And, you know, I knew Trump was going to win the moment he announced it. I just felt like, okay, this is the direction the United States is going to go. And I wasn't following the guy very closely. I voted for him. I've been a supporter of him. And he earned a lot of trust through what he did in a lot of people. Because the country was in good shape. It did, and that was the irony of it. You know, the people that could see that and let it, that were already tired of the government as it was, wanted to let this guy in and try it out because we were already tired of it. Yeah. What's the worst that could happen? And we could see the country getting better. And simultaneously, you had half the country being pounded with this anti-Trump rhetoric every single day. So he earned a lot of trust. And, you know, when you go back and watch his old interviews, that's what really got me. Was I went back and watched interviews from 30 and 40 years ago, where he was essentially the same guy. And you see, he didn't ever really flip flop on anything, right? And like, he's asked about when he would run for president and stuff on Oprah Winfrey. And he's like, I don't think I would unless it got in really bad shape. And you know, you sort of see like this moment of his presidency actually is, you know, it's coming to fruition, this thing that was bound to happen anyway. But Yeah, you know, the thing with Warp Speed and him taking credit and continuing to double down, you know, that it's a bummer because he did earn so much trust and he's lost a lot of fan. Like, all he needs is a single moment of humility, right? To say, look, I got the wrong people involved. You know, that would turn so many hearts around right now that have given up on him, because that's all he has to do is just say, look, I got the wrong people involved and I was duped like you. This thing's not what I thought it was, and it's harming a lot of people. We need to stop getting it out there. Just a short statement like that would go a long way. But just as recently as last week, he doubled down on it again and talked about how many lives he saved. And I didn't know that he actually made that statement a week ago, because I was waiting for him. You know, last I saw, he made a statement about it on in an interview with Candace Owens, and I was like, oh man. That's you know, really heartbreaking, but he's gotta let go of that moment. I think that you know, he might be in a tight spot where he feels like he can't say he made a mistake, because the moment he does, then the left turns on him and says, you know, then that's when all of a sudden you see the mainstream media discovers all these sudden deaths that are happening, and it's all Trump's fault or something like that.
Yes.
And right. And so it's a weird thing to be in. But at the same time, like, to continue to say, well, I saved 100 million lives. It's like, stop saying that. You can't prove that. And nobody wants to hear you say that. So that's the frustrating thing that we're in. I really wish you would just address it on a real a real sincere, honest way, because people haven't seen that from him, I don't think, a real honest moment of humility and taking responsibility, because we need that in our leaders. That's the thing. I like Trump, you know, across the board, except for this gigantic, huge situation, right? This is a gigantic problem that we have that he really wants us to remember and give him credit for. You know, I posted a statement that he made yesterday on Twitter where he said, I hope you remember when you're taking that big, beautiful shot that it was because of me. You know, he really wanted us to wanted us to remember and give him credit for it. And so let's give him credit for it. But we need a leader that's capable of going like, look, I said the wrong thing and I'm sorry. Let's take a second look at this.
Brad, don't go anywhere. I'm going to do my last ad break. Thanks, Jeff.
Let's get rid of 7 billion people? Did Jane Goodall really say that at the World Economic Forum?
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Jane Goodall, who made famous as an environmentalist who lived among the chimpanzees observing their behavior, may have spent too much time with the chimps, as she's now very anti-human. Here is Jane Goodall at the World Economic Forum in Davos.
We cannot hide away from human population growth because, you know, it underlies so many of the other problems. All these things we talk about wouldn't be a problem if there was the size of population that there was 500 years ago.
That's right. If you go back 500 years, you get a world population of about 1 billion people, or 7 billion less than our current number. Maybe if humans could live among the chimpanzees, we could reduce our carbon footprint. You've heard of the movement called the Voluntary Human Extinction Movement, profiled by the New Yorker magazine? Well, perhaps we're fast approaching the day when the word voluntary may be removed from the group's title. This is Mark Morano for TNT Radio and the Morano Minute.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has slammed the unprecedented infusion of private money into America's elections, calling the tactics of the Center for Technology and Civic Life, CTCL, and the Center for Election Innovation and Research, CEIR, totally unacceptable. DeSantis stated, so Zuckerberg, he spent over $400 million through these, quote, non-profits to, quote, help with election administration. But what they would do is they would require certain things to be done, like mass mail balloting, ballot harvesting, and they would focus on partisan voter turnout, basically. That was totally unacceptable. Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson doubted whether Mark Zuckerberg's highly partisan 2020 election spending was even legal. Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky commenting about an investigation by the Wisconsin legislature into Mark Zuckerberg's election influence, asked, "Did Mark Zuckerberg purchase the Wisconsin presidential election?"
Trump is back. Freedom of speech in action. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
I just want to hang around Trump just for a moment longer, if you don't mind. I've got a hypothesis about Trump and his COVID response, COVID in inverted commas. Tell me if I'm onto something or if you agree with me or if it's just nonsense. But I suspect that he, when he won, the deep state didn't expect him to win, number one. Number two, that's why they stopped him from getting a second term. But number three, I think because of the weirdness of this whole 2020 thing that happened, he didn't know which way to go. Maybe doesn't know anything about viruses, etc. And he was quickly surrounded by people who knew in his mind more than he did. And when he was approached by, for example, Deborah Birx, who said to him, "Look, blood's on your hands. If 20 million Americans die, you're going to be to blame. Are you going to be cool with that?" And he's like, "Okay, you do what you need to do." And in a way, what I'm trying to suggest is that he might have been fed the wrong information and went with that, and still to this day thinks that because he is Trump and he's very full of himself. I'm trying to give him just a little bit of leverage here. Or do you think I shouldn't be?
Well, it's understandable. You know, like I said, he earned a lot of trust with a lot of people and put us in a good situation as a country. He revitalized patriotism. And, you know, a lot of good came out of that. And so you want to give him that space. You want to find a reason, like, why are you doing this? You know, and so I understand that. The truth of the matter is, regardless of who, you know, what mistakes were made, who he trusted, people are being injured by this thing. And a lot of people, we're noticing quite a lot anomalies and coincidences, right? With sudden deaths.
Climate change, obviously.
It's clearly climate change.
Yeah.
But it needs to be addressed, and nobody is talking about it. And I just, you know, and not even him. So like, it's even if he still believes it, you know, like he said on that interview, like just last week, he was asked about it. You know, he said, the interviewer said, "What do you make of the possible safety issues that are happening with, you know, there's a lot of talk about this that's happening with the shot." And he said, "Well, you know, he said he's always concerned about it. I believe he said about the safety issues with it, but he understands that they're, you know, he put them under the guise of them being rare or not very often." Mm-hmm. And that's just not true right now. And so, you know, that's the tough thing is that you're trying to give them all this wiggle room and space to be like, "Come on, man, pull through, speak up for these people, speak up for what's happening." And
he's not doing it.
And it just, he's not doing it. And so it's very frustrating because he's losing a lot of people over this. I ran a poll on my Twitter the other day just to sort of feel out the landscape of things and said, "Do you still trust Trump? Or do you still support him?" And it was 50-50 to my amazement, actually. Half the people still did, half the people don't. But that half that doesn't, you know, that's all he's got to do is address this situation, I think. And he's got plenty of outs to say, "Look, I got the wrong people involved. Look, I would, you know, the deep state, whatever."
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, I'm not blaming him for the corruption that has happened since. You know, somebody was telling me yesterday had commented that you can't blame him for what Pfizer and all of them are doing. And I'm not at all. That their corruption is their corruption. What I'm just saying is that, you know, he made that statement. "I hope you remember me when you're taking this,"
yeah,
"you know, beautiful shot." He made that, and I am remembering him. So I'm just saying, come on, you know, pull through for the people that, you know, really want you to pull through, because this is a critical time. Because when he runs again, you know, that 50% that was on my Twitter poll wasn't very scientific, but it's a real world, you know, reaction. They're not going to show up to the poll for him. And, you know, and which leaves DeSantis, which is nice. I like him just fine too. But we don't want to split up that vote in that way. We need to have a strong, solid figure at the forefront. And if we're all sort of fighting over who, you know, it's going to fizzle out and we'll be under this same sort of, you know, corrupt direction from the Democrats that are in power right now.
Brad, we are running out of time. So let me ask you this. Okay. You're standing on the battleground of the information war, and you look out at the horizon. What is it that you see?
I see on the other side of this, and I've said this since the beginning, but the best time to be alive. I think it's right underneath all of this. I think what we're dealing with is froth and distraction and just stuff to keep us from experiencing that. You know, we live in the cleanest time to be alive, the health, most health conscious, the most spiritually conscious, the most technologically convenient time to be alive. It's all right here at our fingertips, but we have so many corrupt people trying to take charge in that. And it, so we're at like this pubescent time where our voice is changing as a whole, you know, and we're not sure, we're kind of ugly, right? And we're figuring ourselves out. But on the other side of that, you become mature and better and stronger as a whole. And I think that that's what humanity is going through right now. Just this weird, awkward time. It's a struggle. It's hard. It's dark. But on the other side of this is the best time to be alive. And I think that the fight is worth it.
Can I follow you and your music?
Yeah, you can. So I'm on all the social media websites at 5 Times August on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the big ones, YouTube, and then the BitChute and Rumble, Odyssey. You can find my videos, Gab and Truth, all those things. And 5timesaugust.com is where you can check out the music, order the CD and shirts, and support the tunes, and sign up for the mailing list there in case I get booted from all of the social media websites. I can at least shoot you an email and let you know what's up.
I'm gonna get hated for this, but is it okay if I say that you're certainly not a sad little man?
I'm not a sad little man. No, I think we have plenty of
those guys. Must I leave right now? I must leave right now and close the door behind me. Do you like a good dad joke?
Of course I do. Yeah, I'm a dad myself, so I say them all the time.
Brad, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm really happy to say that we've made it to the end of the show.
The government did not stop us this time. We got to say what we wanted to say without anybody pulling the plug. So I'm glad that we got to reconnect this week and have a chat. It's been a good one. I appreciate the questions. It's good.
I hope you come back because there's so much more I want to chat to you, but I want to go back to some musical questions as well, because you are a musician, and no conversation with you is good enough unless we can cover some more ground. For example, the 80s. We need to go back to the 80s and get some great inspiration, don't you think?
I think so. I think, you know, that's what we're seeing a lot in the entertainment field, is they keep sort of trudging up the greatness of the 80s and 90s and rebooting it. And I think we need to reconnect with that inspiration, but come up with some new things instead of rehashing the old stuff. So, but I definitely agree. I mean, I love all that stuff. That's my time. That's my childhood.
Brad from 5 Times August, thank you for joining me in the trenches. And thank you to Jeff for producing the show today. I always forget to introduce Jeff at the beginning of the show, but Brad, Jeff is there. Nobody really cares about Jeff all that much because he's in Australia and nobody really cares about Australians, you know.
I care about Jeff. Jeff, you're appreciated in every way. This show would not be possible without you.
There we go. Jeff, Brad appreciates you. And I'm sure there are a few people out there who appreciate Jeff. All right. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Brad. Send me an email, germwarfare@tntradio.live. Let me know where in the world you listen from. I love knowing that. It's my favorite bit. I will catch you tomorrow. I'm out of here. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.